Probably modern second version Davidson and also Pertwee. What about you?
Yes, so in terms of this Mondas, we're going to be talking about the TARDIS, which is obviously the most central part of Doctor Who. And I'm here with Simon from the Waffle podcast, and you've chosen to talk about the TARDIS. What's your favourite console from classic and new? Which one's your favourite?
Peter Davison, second version Peter Davison console with the Amstrad keyboard on it, which I always quite liked. Pertwee one I quite like as well, because it's the first time that everyone thinks that the console was white in black and white Doctor Who. It wasn't. The console was actually a light green colour, almost like a lime green colour. Google Chrome style green, because that's how the cameras would pick up a better brightness, and you get to see that in the John Pertwee era. It's not white at all, it's just green colour, and I quite like that. I quite like the funky greenness of it. So really,
Mondas podcast.
Probably modern second version Davidson and also Pertwee. What about you?
Definitely Davidson. Because when I went to the Doctor Who exhibition.
Yeah.
It's got a pause next to the 80s console and all that. And it was amazing, you know. It's like, I mean, I do like the 80s because obviously it was the first time I ever got into who, obviously, it sort of has a special time for you in your heart, you know. And that's why I like the new console as well. Are you a fan of the new console?
The Christmas version.
Yeah, the new, yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, it's proper sci-fi. It's a little bit more minimalistic. I like there's a Metropolis feel to it, do you know what I mean? And it's definitely got what, I know they've banged on over the past New Who seasons of the ship being more organic, especially with the Eccleston tenant ship with the coral. So it is, you know, you get that kind of like, it grows as the time goes on. I can see why they did that. But I quite like the fact that when you look at the console, it's got the six sides to it and it looks more like the classic era. Now, whether they've done that, of course, to, you know, that they're forward thinking that, are they going to have other doctors on board? So you're going to have them flying it so it's easier to do, because it's quite clearly more open space so cameras can go around it. Or they've done it deliberately so it looks more like a spaceship or, you know, a time capsule than some kind of like organic thing. I'm not sure, but I do like it. People have been moaning on that. It's on various other podcasts. I know Michael from Tin Dog didn't like the moving circles at the top, and people have described it as a carousel. I actually quite like that. I like seeing signs of, you know, the Gallifreyan wording and the Rassilon stuff going on. I quite like that. I think it's a really good design. I mean, I haven't been to the Cardiff exhibition, and I'm hoping to go sometime this year. You know, I think, let's face it, it's going to be an ultimate geek. You mentioned the fact that they got the Fifth Doctor console there. I mean, to me, actually just seeing his coat, just seeing Davison's coat will be enough for me. I mean, you know, that's enough to make any man cry if you're a Who fan, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously they've added quite a lot since I went to Cardiff, but I was looking at how long it takes for me to get there. It's probably about five and a half hours. So it's like, obviously with one change, so it's definitely like, you know, a 2-day event or a weekend or whatever to stay over. But obviously, then get to see all the locations as well. So it's, you know, it's a good thing. In Torchwood, you go, oh, there's where Torchwood, when it was quite good, you know, before they went to America. Oh God!
Oh no! Don't talk about it.
But if you think about it, the TARDIS is a stolen spacecraft. At the end of the day, that's what inherently what it is.
Yeah, I mean, this is the reason why it doesn't work, because when the first Doctor stole it, we're never really 100% sure how old he was when he did steal the box. And it's mentioned quite clearly all the way through Classic Era that he in quotes, borrowed it. Yet, obviously, we had the Doctor's Wife, where in which she says, no, I chose you. You know, there's something quite sweet about that, but yeah. I prefer to think that he actually stole it. And the reason why he stole it, because it was in for repairs. The Camellia Circuit was on its way out. Mm. And there's various other nods as to, you know, things that were quite working on the TARDIS, hence the reason why it was going to be, you know, well, really, it was going to be dumped, which is pretty nice.
It's very interesting as well that it's kept the police box thing the whole time, apart from, say, Attack of the Cybermen or something. But, you know, inherently it's kept the same shape and all that, and it's like, it's such an iconic thing, especially when you go to places and they've got all police boxes. People do go, oh, there's a TARDIS.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. Metropolitan Police sued the BBC in the late 1990s, I think, or could have been before the movie, the TV movie, claiming breach of copyright because they invented the, well, actually, a slight geek fact here. I mean, Gilbert Mackenzie Trench designed what we know as a police box as used by the police back in the 1930s, you know. And they say that if it wasn't for them, then the police box wouldn't be around. But because the BBC had been marketing it and had been on, you know, on shelves from the early, you know, Dapol models, which I've got upstairs, the BBC won the right to say that they actually owned the rights to the police box. I mean, it's a bit of a kick in the teeth when you think about it. And the reason why, I don't know if you've seen it in outside the Earl's Court tube station, there is a modern police box there actually used as a CCTV. There's a CCTV camera on the top of it. If you just type in Earl's Court and put in TARDIS, you'll see it. And there's a picture, actually look on my Facebook page, because there's a picture of me hugging it, I think. And because it is quite good to see. It's a huge box. It's more the modern version, the Eccleston Smith version, because it's a big chunky box. But the reason why they built that was to give them credence for going to court to say, look, we still use them, you know, and we built one here. It didn't work.
No, but it's fascinating that it's like they become synonymous, you know, with Doctor Who and it. Did you like the episode Attack the Cybermen when they try to kind of go, oh, look what we're gonna do with the Chameleon Circuit? Did you like the fact it was a piano and stuff?
I love the idea of a TARDIS being a Chameleon Circuit, and we see it enough times with the Master's TARDIS, which is fully working. Although, of course, obviously, his interior set is just painted black with a little bit of dark shading, but that's the
don't ruin it.
Well, I like it when it's realistic. Okay, and I know people are going, what do you mean realistic? You're talking science fiction here, but when the TARDIS is a police box, okay, you can open the door and you walk in. The actual default setting of a TARDIS is actually a grey cabinet with a sliding door. That's what they all look like when they're in the shipyard. Okay, so you know, you can just go and pick one. It's a bit like going to MFI and buying a cheap wardrobe. You know what you're going to get. It looks fairly bland. I like it when it could change into, say, a bookshelf, a column, possibly even a tree, maybe. But a piano, you never see him get in it. I mean, how does he get into it? Does he open the lid and try and clamber into it like someone from Morecambe and Wise? No. So I don't like it when it's that. Or a chair. I mean, a chair. I mean, does that mean he's got to duck down doing one of those cheap jokes where you think someone's walking behind a sofa and going downstairs? Do you know?
I mean, obviously, it'd be good for men and lesbians. Would Perry trying to get into a piano TARDIS? You know, there's always going to be good value there for tea time for dads and etc. You know?
To be fair, I'd happily pay money to see Perry getting into anything. Nicole Bryant is still incredibly, incredibly gorgeous.
Yes, I mean, me and Danny were watching Dimensions in Time the other day, and we're just saying as well, she still looked great then, and she still looks great now, so, you know, it's like, it's you know, get her back on it. She was on, like, adverts occasionally and stuff.
Yeah, and do you follow her on Twitter?
Yes, I do, but I don't really take note of lots of things. There's too much going on Twitter for me.
Oh, I've had a nice Twitter chat with her.
Really? Wow.
Does
your wife know?
look, come on. There's acceptable ones. She's got Jason Statham. I'm having Perry.
Oh, my God. Statham and Nicola Bryan is the dream couple.
Oh, Crank 3. There you go.
Wow. But yes, in terms of the TV movie, what did you think of the task in the TV movie then?
Yeah, well, it's a nice design. Richard Hoodling designed that one, and it was based on the Davidson fiberglass designs and the real police box, the Gilbert Trench one. And yeah, I quite like it. There's two versions of that. I don't know if you know that. There's actually two versions of it made. There's your standalone, almost in black, it's Hero version. And then there's actually a wider version made so that when the bike goes in it, it was able to travel safely through the doors.
Ah.
Yeah, I'm not too keen. Well, I say I'm not too keen on the colour blue. And this is incredibly geeky, but that colour is actually more closer to original police box design. We have a police box here in Worcestershire, in fact, not too far away from where I live. And without shadow of a doubt, I always go and have a look at it, and it is much closer to that colour blue. When you look at the 76 version, no, probably the Pertwee version later on, that has a really strange blue, almost like a sky blue colour with the dark police box sign. That colour I don't particularly like. But no, I quite like the movie version, and I love the inside. I love the interior version. People say that the copper brass Matt Smith one was very steampunkish. Yeah, I can see why you say that, because people, if you see brass on anything, people automatically say steampunk. I believe that the Paul McGann TARDIS interior is a lot more steampunk, especially when you see Sylvester McCoy sitting there reading, you know, his book and munching on jelly babies. You look around, that's a lot more steampunky, and I think it's a fantastic design, and you can see the influence from that one to the Eccleston version.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, totally. I think there's a natural progression. Obviously, there's a lot of fan fiction in between there, you know, what in terms of the Time War and stuff.
Mm.
Also, we've also got, I could be wrong, I might get shut down with this, it was Mask of Mandragora somewhere around there where they had the other console room.
The secondary console room, wood panelled one, yeah. I mean, that didn't last long. The only reason why it didn't last long was because the fact that, unlike today's modern sets, which once built are up permanently until moved to any kind of museum or anything, the classic era console rooms were always taken down. There's evidence of this where you see on a Perry episode where the walls are like kind of like almost like satellite dishes. That's only seen, I think, maybe one episode, could be two. Yeah, again, might be shot down here. But the reason why you don't see that again is because it was damaged in taking it down. And then the next episode, you see the wallpaper backdrop, which is often seen in the Trayton and Hartnell era. The reason why you only see the secondary console, actually, that's the main console room. The Fourth Doctor does turn around and say that this was the main one. And the one that we see is actually the secondary one. This changes every now and again. But the reason why it wasn't used again was the fact that it would not last the constant, you know, removal, taking down and putting back again, because it was made of wood and beautifully, beautifully designed as well.
Oh, yeah, totally. I think it really worked for that episode as well when it was in, you know. It was just different as well. It's like, oh, what's this, you know. Because you couldn't have a duplicate console room. That would be boring, you know. So, you know, the fact that we had a bit of wood in and stuff like that was good.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing of when the episode where Amy and Rory, you know, suddenly find themselves in the old console room, the Eccleston Tennant console room, you know, that would have been so much better if that landed on the classic era. Even better if it was sort of like, you know, Trayton, second Doctor console room, which is actually the same as the first one. There was no difference in that at all, virtually. That would have been so much better than going in. But, yeah, okay, the reason why I did it was because literally the new set was next to the old set. So.
Oh, yeah, totally. I must admit, I really like when they actually start exploring the TARDIS properly. You know, I think it was late sort of Tom Baker and... Mm-hmm. You've got them wandering around in all these weird little places inside the TARDIS, and you find it, and obviously in Davison's era, you find like all these different rooms where their bedrooms are and stuff, and you actually see them in them, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not, I mean, we had a brief glimpse with Rory and Amy going through the TARDIS, and that's about it on modern day here. Okay, we saw the big wardrobe with Tennant, which was, you know, quite nice to see. I would like to see a few more nods to the classic costumes, but here's a brief list of some of the rooms that you do get to see over in Doctor Who. There was a swimming pool, obviously, at the Seventh Doctor jettison because it had a leak. There's various bedrooms. There's a laboratory, a power room, the wardrobes we mentioned, a boot room, a room just for boots, a cricket club room with trophies, a tool room. There is a bathroom. There's the ancillary power station, which the Silurians tried to destroy, which is the backup generator. There's a greenhouse, a sick bay, a workshop, the cloister room, the library and a zero. And the cloister room, of course, we see with the Fourth Doctor, miserable Tom, you know, the end era Tom, where he's walking around talking to, well, really just shouting and putting Adric down, which, of course, is no bad thing. And you see all the vines and he's, you know, he's breaking bits off and he says the TARDIS is dying, it's getting too old. Well, that's the in the cloisters. I love that room. I think it's steeped in kind of mystery and history. And I hope with the new episode for Series 7, well, modern-day Series 7B, that we get, there's an episode, I think it's Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS or something like that. I mean, the trouble with naming that, of course, is fan expectation, like it always is with us. Like, you know, we know when we're being teased, like the next Doctor or the Doctor's wife or the Doctor's daughter, we know that it's not true. But when you're saying Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS, that's what we want, because we've had in the past, as you say, Peter Davison was, you know, walks around the corridors with, you know, unknitting the Fourth Doctor scarf. We've had in the Zero Room, we've had the Sixth Doctor walking around it. And in the Fourth Doctor, we had, you know, a little bit of corridor, and then a hospital being used because the writer's strike was on. And so you're just walking up a normal hospital and kind of like, you believe it, but you think, it just looks like, you know, your local hospital nuthouse, really.
And I'm just fearing that Eric Roberts is going to be, like, hovering around somewhere in the TARDIS, you know, next to the Eye of Harmony. Wanting to be the master again, you know.
Please, no. I mean, he was terrible.
Yeah, he was trying to be camp and ham it up, but I think the master's something that you can never get right after Delgado. I don't think you can really improve on him.
And it's really hard, isn't it? I mean, Anthony Ainley did a really good job, you know, and I know he absolutely loved playing the role of the master, and I know from reports from people who've met him that he was absolutely lovely man. And there was I think it was the Doctor Who podcast played a interview. Did you hear it?
He
was taking them kids back home. I mean, you wouldn't do that now, like, could you? Especially with the BBC scandal, good Lord. But he was such a nice chap, you know, talking away and all this kind of thing. And you kind of got the sense that, yeah, you can tell. I mean, this is the early reign of his master as well. I think he got a little bit, had a dose of the Tom Bakers towards the end of his genre, where he believed his hype a little bit too much. But no, I mean, when you got Roger Delgado, I think, you know, you are one looking at a classical actor, but also there's menace in that man's eyes. You know, you really truly believe that he's evil. Something that's, as you say, has never really been done again, because I know, what's his name, John Seaman. I think John Seaman is a fabulous actor. I think he's really good. But I would much prefer to have seen more of Derek Jacobi. You know, I mean, Derek Jacobi narrates in The Night Garden on CBeebies. You know, he sings in The Night Garden, and then you see him as the master. And to me, that's perfect, because you've got nice version of him, all calm, and then you got real evil version of him, and he did evil perfectly. He's got that Shakespearean, you know, darkness that comes out, and to me, that's what the master should be. You should fear him. We can't see him, and not all this, all respect to him, obviously he can only act what he's given, and I think he was given crap to act with. He was just, you know, dancing to the Scissor Sisters again. We're going back to Eric Roberts. I can see that happening.
So just I'm going to pull everything round together. We're going to be concise today. That's the plan anyway. in terms of the new console, why did we get an explanation for why that it was suddenly changed. Was there anything in the Christmas special? Because I can't remember anything.
Nope, there was no explanation at all. No. Rightly so. Rightly so, I think. There's no need to give exposition all the time. There's, you know, you automatically take it for granted as soon as you walk in. And let's face it, we all knew there's going to be a new console. I mean, the BBC had been leaking little pictures on there, and Doctor Who magazine has got full information, although I haven't read it yet, all the information you could possibly want. There's obviously things have happened since the, I think people say the death of the Ponds. They still lived. They died of old age at the end. So, I mean, regardless of what you think of that. And he obviously hasn't got over it. The same thing happened with what we presume happened at the end of the Time War, where the reason why we have the Battlescar TARDIS, the Cole TARDIS, it's a war machine at this point. And so the TARDIS will always reflect the mood of the Doctor. And, you know, you've got the bright new young thing, hence the copper brass version. And now you've got this more sci-fi kind of like cold version of it. So there's obviously something meticulous going on in the Doctor's mind. We know that he's had more adventures since the departure of the Ponds because he'd had... 300 years worth of adventures in between episodes. So I think it's good to, you don't need to explain it, and I hope they don't, because if they do, it just ends up ruining it. Why have you got a new, hence who's going to ask? Because there's only us who look at it. The new companion's not seeing it, and Amy and Rory aren't going to come back, I hope, anyway. Let's not do a Rose, because that was awful, having her constantly coming back in more complex than Neil Sedaka. So let's not have an explanation for it. There's no need, you know.
And even during the episode, I don't know if you noticed, but it looks slightly battered, like slightly dirty at one point, and then it was okay later on. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, no, I've watched it twice now, and actually two and a half times. And the first time you see it when on the cloud, it is really in a state. I mean, it looks like it's been dragged through a hedge backwards. Probably has, considering how he drives it. And then there's a bit when he materialises a TARDIS with Richard E. Grant, and it's clean. And you think, well, hold on a minute, what has happened there? And I think you see it again dirty. So I think it's possibly that's a continuity error, although... Do you remember the time when we was watching the one with the Weeping Angels and suddenly think, yes. Oh, he hasn't got his coat on that. Yeah, his jacket's gone. Right? Yeah. And you just think, oh, maybe I didn't notice that. Could be a little thing, but is he going to mix all these things together for the new series? He could be, because there was a nod to the Dalek episode in the Christmas episode when he sort of suddenly realised when she says, I like making souffles. So he could do, you wouldn't put it past Moffat. People moan at that kind of thing, though, with these little things he throws in. I love it. It just keeps you sharp. And if you don't notice it, I'm one of these people who are more than happy. In fact, I'm delighted. You know, the payoff when you suddenly realise why he didn't have a jacket with the angels. I sat there and went, oh, man, I love that. That is fantastic. That's, you know, it's given me an extra surprise because I hadn't noticed it. So maybe there will be an answer to it and not a continuity fault, because if it was a continuity fault, someone's getting the sack.
I can't imagine a continuity fault. I think everything they do has a reason.
There's loads of things, isn't there? The voice in the TARDIS has never been explained. Mm. You know, there's a few things, really. But sometimes you just got to go, yeah, it's all right.
So, summing up, what are you hoping from the next half of the season in terms of the TARDIS? Are you hoping to actually really genuinely see past the TARDIS we haven't seen, or do you think it'll just be a total kind of let down and we'll see a little bit of the TARDIS? So.
Well, as I said earlier on, if you're going to name an episode about, you know, a journey to the centre of the TARDIS, you've got to go actually into the TARDIS. And the only trouble with doing that, the wonderful thing about the classic era TARDIS with the white walls with the circles on, you can quite easily move that around, you know, and make different corridors and do like a red dwarf where they're just walking around in circles, but it looks slightly different. And you do get the sense of depth, you know. I mean, the TARDIS is, I think the fourth Doctor says that it's infinite. The size is infinite. You know, it's this huge, huge space where even the Doctor gets lost because it moves its own corridors around, you know, when it feels like it at times. So I'm so hoping that episode is going to be, you know, exploring the TARDIS. I want to see rooms. I'd love to see, and maybe this is what will happen. Maybe he'll open a room and there'll be, you know, what's this? Oh, this was, you know, Susan's room. You know, who's Susan? Yeah, yeah. And then link into something where, oh, Susan was my granddaughter. And it explains the granddaughter. And then you see, you know, because I know people have mentioned this before, but I thought this when we started thinking about the 50th anniversary of, are they going to do a thing where, like they did with Deep Space Nine, you know, where they filmed episodes and put it into the Trouble with Tribbles episode? Are they going to do it where Matt Smith's walking along Totter's Lane, you know, and he sees Barbara and Ian get out of the car and walk towards the scrapyard? You know, you could do all stuff like that and actually have that in the TARDIS. The TARDIS could be the link to all these stories, you know. This was Romana's room, this was, you know, Adric's, oh, I'm to Adric, you know, and all this. But I hope we do get to see more of it. And also, by the look of it, this TARDIS is a lot easier to walk around, because I know that the copper brass TARDIS, the stairs, you could walk up a little bit, but they actually wasn't built past that, and it was just like, you know, false floors. So maybe that does, so it, you know, it will span off, but it would be really good to, you know, get walking around the TARDIS, as long as the story is good as well. I mean, just having walking around like hobbits would be pretty crap.
do you want to tell everyone about your podcasts and your other stuff, websites to plug?
Yeah, well, I, you know, as every time I do turn up talking with you on your show, we end up waffling on and going in different directions, and unfortunately that's why I do. Yeah, I mean, I do a podcast called Waffle On Podcast with my mate Cal, and we talk about classic TV and films from around the world, and you can find that at waffleon.podbean.com. And I'm also the lead writer at, or one of the lead writers along with Stefan Sornock, who's the main man at Martian Creative, and we did the long running, I think it's 38 episode The Martians Are Here, and we've got some new stuff coming out this year, which is looking pretty big because we've been working on it for years. So there's a lot of writing, a lot of directing and audio work and everything going on, so it's taken up all my evenings, Ian. It's hard work, this is.
Wowza.
My best podcast.